Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm William English, and today's guest is Ed Baxter. Good afternoon, Ed.
Hello, William. Nice to see you again.
Again? Yes, indeed. This, in fact, is the it is actually the sixth time.
Is it
that we have chatted?
That's terrible. As I always disapprove of appearing on Resonance. I think it's sort of a bit incestuous, but.
You got something against incest? What's the problem?
Sixth time, and I've still got something to say. It seems
well. You might overtake Morris at this rate as one of my favourite guests. Ah, actually,
so. that's high praise. I can't think of anything higher.
The most recent excursion was a few weeks ago, I suppose, we were talking at that time about art in ruins.
Yeah,
and your own. Part in Art in Ruins. Do we need a resume of what we covered that day, or can you remember?
Well, you tell me if we're repeating ourselves. I should all say, right. as usual, for the general listener, I wasn't part of Art in Ruins. That was the duo of Glyn Banks and Hannah Vowles. I collaborated on a few projects with them back in the 1980s, late 80s, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah.
We sort of started... 1984, and you said you were never a member. You met them at Kingston, in fact.
Well, through my friend Simon Dickerson, who was a student of theirs at Kingston Polytechnic, as it then was.
Right, yeah. And we sort of whizzed through the years, to some extent, a show curated by Hercules Fisherman, Our Wonderful Culture, an exhibition which you described as overhung at St. George's.
Well, again, I have to correct you. Maybe we shouldn't go through all this, because otherwise it would be a series of corrections, wouldn't it? It was Our Wonderful Culture, Art in Ruins, collectively curated by Art in Ruins and Hercules Fisherman. But we covered all that, didn't we?
Well, we did, but yeah. I just thought I'd whip through trying to bring us up to where we might launch off from today.
Where did we finish?
We finished somewhere like 1990, I think. Some works which were destroyed... of yours, left in a squat. Roger Parry and Bill Brandt's son. A falling out with Banks and Vowell. And then the Museum of Installation, the early 1990s, an abominable installation with an art coffee table book.
That's your notes are slightly confused, I think. But anyway, it allows me to give you the gist of this email from Glyn and Hannah. He said they never had much to do with the Museum of Installation, but they were told by them that they'd been commissioned to produce a book on installation art and that Art in Ruins should be featured as the missing link between the 60s, 70s and 80s installation art. And then they said they delivered some slides to the Museum of Installation, and the next thing they heard was that conservative left art critic Mike Archer had been appointed editor at a late stage, and when the book eventually came out, we were nowhere to be found. Stalinized out of existence along with our collaborators. And Glyn and Hannah say, the collective amnesia surrounding Our Wonderful Culture et al. Seems to be a necessary prerequisite for the founding of the punk myth of Frieze and the launching of young British art sometimes afterwards. And that seems to be absolutely pertinent.
Yeah. So they were excluded from this book.
It might appear to
perhaps
to
they
some
grateful.
People. Yeah. It might appear to some people that it's some sort of definitive book, but I don't know. I doubt it. I know that I've written in my own copy that it should be avoided as nonsense. And then I found, I mean, it's coincidentally, because I hadn't really given any of this subject much thought until you raised it as a possible thing to talk about. But I think between this show and the last one we did, I did a lecture at the Slade. And because of your interest, I took some slides along, which I brought with you today to have a look at, half a dozen of them, which I showed, and which, there was a very, very interested reaction from both the students and the staff to this whole area of work, and it ended with one of the staff asking me, I think a bit like you did, whether this kind of confrontational art was actually pertinent or not. And I had to say that I was unable to do anything but encourage the students to make confrontational art and to follow their
instinct,
the imp of the perverse, maybe, rather than instinct,
mm-hmm.
Rather than buy into the general trend of the culture, which I think of as exercises in spectacular infantilism. And that meant that when the students occupied the Slade the other day and asked if we'd broadcast the occupation bulletins, I couldn't help but say yes, otherwise I'd appeared like a hypocrite, wouldn't I? But also, I kind of...
But was there a hesitation there?
No, not at all. More maybe a tiny twinge of envy at having the lines so clearly drawn up. Although I have to say, I haven't actually seen any of the artworks that have resulted, apart from a very beautiful photograph that Richard Thomas took of police officers covered in a Jackson Pollock-style action painting.
That is a great photograph, actually. I did actually say to Richard, that's a really great picture, and apparently he didn't take it.
Oh, well, maybe
it,
not.
It's okay. From some, I think he called it something beginning with like Demotic or Democritus or something, some group of...
I'm not bothered about who took the photograph. I like
But it is a great image.
I like the action.
The paint has literally hit the policeman's helmet and has sort of jumped into the air, so you've got this... The paint is sort of frozen in time, isn't it?
Mm.
Which is, it's a great picture.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice.
So where does that figure in this? This was an example of...
It just seemed to be coincidental, that was all. That when I was at the Slade, there wasn't any... seemed to be any intention on people's parts to actually do anything in that sense. And then the opportunity arose, and... Yeah, I thought that was quite encouraging.
Yeah.
Really. No, I don't have any. Haven't really thought it through myself. I've been too busy grinding my teeth at the lack of intelligent commentary in what they call the mainstream media, which strikes me as characterized by its intellectual stupidity and dishonesty. Very sad to say. I say that as a citizen, as a private individual, not as somebody connected to another media outlet.
Right.
Like not wearing my resonance hat, just as a consumer and observer of it seems to be acres of trivia, doesn't it? These protests made both the commentariat, or whatever one calls them, and the vast majority of both light entertainment and fine art seem even more pointless and embarrassing than usual. So, that's sort of where my mind is at the moment.
Yes, I think the most interesting piece I found was by something called RT, which is actually Russian television, apparently. They were broadcast entirely in English, and they had some English sort of professor on talking about Europe sinking into a black hole of debt, he spoke very well about the current situation in a way that you just don't see on English television, where they seem to be mostly concerned with, proving that the guy in the wheelchair was actually rolling towards the police when they dragged him out and sort of things like that. But did you see that interview?
Yes, I think there's the methodology of the maximum security youth custody centre has been applied to the entire culture, isn't it? It's restraint.
Yes.
Tie somebody to a chair or kettle them, and then distraction therapy. You sort of hit them around the ear while you're punching them in the stomach. So you kind of do two things at once. It seems to me a very, very peculiar time to be living through. But quite interesting.
I think you were there, weren't you, in Parliament Square when the big demonstration took place?
No, I sat at home picking my teeth, I think, or something.
Did you?
Yeah, no, I'm afraid I wasn't there.
All right.
I was.
My mistake.
I think I was at work, actually.
Oh, right.
Probably here.
It must have been some sort of little aside on Facebook. I kind of got the impression that you were.
Oh,
you,
no, don't. That's not me on Facebook.
Isn't it?
William,
no, okay. Sorry. It must be your doppelganger. Yeah, someone calling himself Ed Baxter, then.
Somebody who only nice things happen to.
All right. So, well, now these slides of yours, I noticed that one of them had LFMC on it.
That's
I've looked at them for about 10 seconds, but.
That's because the frame was probably provided by Denise Arisio,
okay.
Who was one of the participants in that the group show Anon, which the booklet of which I brought in to show you, the only copy I have of that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Denise was in that. Who was it?
Okay, so the image has nothing to do with the filmmakers' co-op.
No.
Right.
I don't think so. No, it's just how you know how things are. You end
I
up
see.
Recycling.
Okay. Very
slides.
Misleading. A bit like the you on Facebook as well. It's terribly
tangled web of deceit
and misinformation.
And erasure and so on. But
right. Well, that is the modern way, I suppose. Mm. Well, where should we go from 1990? Is there anything?
There was that show in Luton. That booklet I showed you earlier, Anon. I think we'd ended up. Or some of us, maybe it was my inclination, was that the work should also be anonymous and so I suppose at the same time as other people were wanting to erase what we'd done, maybe some of us were also erasing ourselves in some sense. Certainly I was very keen that you should go into a installation space or come across objects and that they weren't authored and their state was ambiguous so that there wouldn't be that much differentiation between a pile of tyres in the street and a pile of tyres in an art gallery, I suppose. And I think that... That show kind of signally failed to do anything more than confirm the confusion on the part of its participants, which included Simon Dickerson again and Andy Hopton and Stuart Holm, I think, yeah, and... Lepke B, actually, as well as Denise and there must have been, I think, Bridget Sawyers and maybe a couple of other people. It's all...
Is this your teabag piece?
Yeah, I don't know why that's reproduced there. Maybe we didn't have anything better to do, or maybe there was some attempt at self-archiving.
Right.
I don't know. But clearly, looking at it now, the individual pages are very individual, aren't they? It's quite difficult to...
So this is a stapled pamphlet, cheaply produced, it has to be said, what do you call it, Xeroxing, photocopying?
That was...
Letterpress?
That was at Instant Print West 1 would knock out 300 of those, probably, for...
Yeah. With a colour photograph image of knives, sort of, which is a glossy colour photograph, close-up of knife blades inserted, all anon. This is 1989, an installation in Luton. Am I right?
That's right.
33 Arts Centre Luton. And is this, so were Art in Ruins anything to do with this, or is this...
No, I suppose they were noticeable by their absence. After the... We did a show in Malmö in Sweden. That was funny stroke tragic from many of anecdotal point of view. Mm-hmm. It was sort of interesting. Simon drove to Malmer from Old Street. We had the first car accident was at Old Street roundabout, which was maybe a sign. And the second one was at the car park in Harwich before we'd even got on the ferry.
Right.
And by the time we got to Denmark, we spent most of the money we had with us.
So did you drive through Holland that way?
We drove across Denmark.
Oh, so you got the boat all the way to Denmark from Harwich?
Well, we hadn't anticipated, and nobody thought to check, that Denmark comprises two land masses separated by a large stretch of water, and they would have to pay for another ferry to get across the water. And so by the time we got to Malmö, we didn't have any money left. I think we'd spent all our money getting there.
Right.
And then Glyn and Hannah arrived by plane. That was a very sensible decision. You have to bear in mind that these times driving was the only way to five of us to get there. I think there was a cassette player in the car, I seem to recall, and we only had two cassettes. Stuart Holm bought the first Adam and the Ants album, and I bought Political Songs of Cornelius Cardew. So by the time we also got to Malmö, everybody...
I was thinking disapprovingly of the Adam and the Ants, but then the Cornelius Cardew...
Yeah, the worst possible...
Right.
I think both were by accident, wasn't it?
Right.
You know, nobody would have chosen those two things as kind of road movie music. And, of course, it seemed to be terrifically expensive and... at Harwich, I actually thought of just walking to the railway station and leaving everybody. And I think that mood continued because at the private view, I got very drunk. I mean, like, insanely drunk. I think I must have been given some sort of Mickey Finn. I was absolutely wild and managed to insult absolutely everybody connected with the show, the gallery, Sweden, it seemed to be, to the point where the next day nobody was talking to me, which is very unusual.
Really?
Usually somebody might talk to me. Everybody else went and made this film that I think Stuart has put online. I kind of feel quite glad I wasn't part of that, but I just lay on this camp bed staring into space for about 20 hours, and then of course we had to grimly trudge back into the car and drive back, and I think Glyn and Hannah quite rightly decided they'd had enough of my company thing. I'm actually amazed that other people didn't just cut me out of their lives, really.
This seems to be a recurring, I hesitate to call it a nightmare, but there was a similar story the last time.
Maybe it's
for a different exhibition.
Maybe it's
where they refused to talk. You didn't speak to them for years afterwards.
I think this was probably.
Is it the same one?
Maybe it was. Yeah, maybe we didn't get around to the details.
Or do you get you? You
well, maybe
you
I've lied.
But you've probably forgotten. I don't know. Do you get drunk a lot?
That's a leading question.
And indeed.
Yeah, let's not go there.
All right.
I'm not using the drink as an excuse, just as a colour.
Have a label called alcohol, don't you?
Well, I did, yes.
Yeah.
So, talking about alcohol is not interesting. But anyway, the point I was trying to make was that the Anon show was sort of like trying to resolve a lot of social and artistic problems by creating this... now I think it's a sort of mist over what we were doing, but it didn't work. So again, there were, just as one would anticipate actually now, different antagonists were brought into the frame. And
Invited or just attached?
Yes, invited and attached. Yeah. Not by me, I should say. I wasn't the only person who was constantly out of order by any means.
It's beginning to sound like artists in ruin rather than
artists. Career in ruins, yeah. I'm sure those jokes have been made. But, I think after that show in Luton, certainly Andy Hopton had decided he had enough of everybody. Simon and Denise, I think, tried to fix up a show at the Filmmakers Co-op in the basement. And I think my name was on the invitation card, but all I did was I swept up the the dust and materials just before the private view and didn't exhibit any work and didn't actually do anything at all for the show. And by that time I was, I'd sort of taken the final logical step from doing, you know, group work to anonymous work to not doing anything at all.
Oh, right.
That was that, really, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Was that a choice to not do?
I didn't actually think the show at the Filmmakers' Cart was of any interest to me whatsoever. Being not very intelligent, I had taken a long time to think, well, I can choose who to work with, and I don't have to be. It's sort of wrong to be loyal to my friends, insofar as I was. I mean, it makes me sound like I was a reliable sort of person rather than a feckless ape. That was the end of that, actually. Yeah.
Right.
And then I did other things, which didn't really. What did I do? I tried to do a few things in a laboured way, but they, whatever the momentum had been of that quite short period, had dissipated, and the people involved had sort of gone in their own directions. And it wasn't just like massive rows or anything. It was a question of several quite intelligent people wanting to do very specific things, and the weaker characters not really having any direction or motivation. So I think I was one of the weaker characters, and it's quite easy around about 1990 to just fall into step with the times and think, well, it's too difficult. Then I decided to went and did something else. It's completely ridiculous, which was to start organising concerts.
There was this sort of leap. I mean, there was no musical sort of, I mean, apart from an interest in music at that time. How did you kind of phase into the LMC, the London Musicians Collective, from there? Or had you always had a connection?
I'd always had some connection, but the reason I got into that was because it seemed to me, again, I think I sort of retired from the art world out of arrogance, and then out of a innate pomposity, I thought that I was typesetting the LMC newsletter to earn a crust. You know, I got 20 quid a month or something from that. And it all seemed to be full of utterly disillusioned and broken commentary, moaning, really. And so I thought, well,
the newsletter was?
Yeah, I thought I could organise this shambles better than these people. And that, again, involved working with other people, which I suppose I've always found, you know, socially important. And then again, involved not getting on with other people, which is one of these things, isn't it? That I was quite clear about what I thought it could achieve, but other people seemed to be retarding those initiatives to some extent, and I suppose I just willed it into doing what I wanted to do, and then got reasonably lucky for a few years by taking, I don't know, opportunistic decisions, I suppose I'd look at them as now. But yeah, I don't think they weren't cynically opportunistic. They were just doing what seemed to be
what presented itself.
So yes, that was, and that by, you know, that kind of became quite all-consuming, the way things do, and led into this.
Has come to this point.
Yes.
So it's curious in a way, isn't it? The way things turn out.
Yeah, no, I don't. I'm not nostalgic or mournful for anything. I wouldn't have done anything differently, apart from maybe gone to a better school or something like that. Yeah, the improvement mm-hmm. needed to be done about the age of six.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah.
You know.
Art in Ruins also had a sort of an enforced silence, didn't they? Did they choose to be silent or opt out of?
Do you know, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not by no means the expert because I went and did other things, and they seem to be getting on with very interesting work. Actually, there was a great piece with a stuffed sheep, which now sounds terribly. Outmoded at I think the showroom. So yes, I always think of the YBAs as kind of terrible dilution of their work and that kind of Thatcherite project. But I'm certainly not the expert commentator on what happened after my. Activities. And yes, the reason I brought this book with me today, you were going to read out something. But
We've got about 30 seconds, well, 2 minutes actually.
Yeah,
all right.
The Eva Weinmayer's book, which 21 Scenes Concerning the Silence of Art in Ruin, she's kind enough to send me. But I did say to her I didn't really want to be associated with it as it was film interviews turned into a kind of drama, which I'm afraid, from my point of view, it's this kind of misrepresentation, and I haven't even looked at it because it sort of annoys me.
Right.
What a terrible personality I come across! I said that kind of disapproving, pompous.
Well, you're doing a great job here, Ed. You've done a wonderful job.
You've
run Resonance very well. You're too hard on yourself. Yeah. I was briefly going to read out something. I don't know if we've
got time.
Because the book you gave me last time, which was to do with the ICA show of Art in Ruins, it seemed to me that the way they there's a piece called Try Another World by Glyn Banks.
Great piece of writing, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah? And it seemed to me an aphoristic sort of style of writing.
Mm-hmm.
Which put me in mind of the Society of the Spectacle, which is also written in these sort of like chunks of not entirely unrelated, but they're sort of like brief paragraphs, which seem to be...
But also J.G. Ballard's early work, maybe.
Right. But this dates from 1967, and art in the epoch of its dissolution, a negative movement... which seeks the supersession of art in a historical society where history has not yet lived, is simultaneously an art of change and the pure expression of impossible change. The more grandiose its reach, the more its true realization is beyond it. This art is forcibly avant-garde, and it is not. Its avant-garde is its disappearance.
On that bombshell.
That's from the Society of the Spectacle by Guy Debord, 1967. Well, we've run out of time again yet, Ed, I'm afraid.
I await your book that ties all these things together.
Well, I really want to talk to you about Filth, your own book, which you refused to talk... You did not
Too
want
bad.
To talk about that as
Too
being
bad.
Grisly and embarrassing.
Well, it has stylistic similarities with the things you're commenting about, which I hadn't really thought about. So, yes, another time, maybe
all right.
a year. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we now have to fade out and I have no idea what's coming up next. James,
thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Ed, for joining us, and have yourself a merry little Christmas.